Hi, Simon.
Hi, Bob.
How you doing?
Pretty good.
Good. Let me introduce us. I'm Robert Wright of Blogging Heads TV, and you are Simon Young, and you've been kind enough to join us from Hong Kong, where you're a professor of law at the University of Hong Kong and director of the Center for Comparative and Public Law. And you are going to illuminate the Edward Snowden situation. Snowden, of course, has famously disclosed some classified documents bearing on American surveillance. Shortly before doing that, he went to Hong Kong, where we assume he still is, right? You are an expert on the law, and that's going to figure pretty heavily in his fate, I guess, and politics may as well. We'll talk about both of those things. Let me just start by asking you how much awareness there is in Hong Kong of this case. Is everyone talking about it? Are there sightings of Edward? Do people say, "I think I saw Edward Snowden," or any? What's it like there?
Well, of course, it's been about a week and a half now since the story was released, and yeah, people in Hong Kong are well aware. They're well aware of the international media that's here, that's covering Hong Kong. It's been on the front page for the past week or so. I just started noticing today reporting seems to be dying down a little bit. Mm-hmm. But there was, of course, the huge demonstration on the weekend. That was really quite amazing.
Tell us about that.
Oh, yeah, the hundreds of people coming out on the streets, rallying in favor of Mr. Snowden. And this, of course, came out right after the revelation that the U.S. had been hacking into Hong Kong servers and Chinese.
That was Snowden's revelation, right?
That's right. That's right. That really, I think, charged up the people here. And you should have seen the signs that people had. In fact, even if we go out today and you go to the main business district central, there are still signs that are still on the side of the roads in favor of Snowden, free Snowden.
What kinds of things? Free Snowden? There's a free Snowden movement.
Free Snowden. Stop hacking. And wanting more information, more accountability from the U.S. So it's really charged us up, and there were some preliminary surveys done saying that more than half the people, would say that we shouldn't return him if and when the request comes in. I mean, the surrender request from the U.S. government hasn't even come in yet, as far as we know. But he seemed to has done well in winning popular support here.
Okay. There's no doubt that the request, it's commonly called an extradition request, but technically I guess it's actually a surrender request.
That's right.
For reasons having to do with Hong Kong's relationship to China. Because Hong Kong is not a sovereign state, but is a special administrative zone of China. There's no doubt that that's going to happen, right? I mean, the U.S. is going to press charges and this will come to a head. Now, he sounded as if he felt well positioned to withstand that. I mean, his quote was, "I have had many opportunities to flee Hong Kong, but I would rather stay and fight the United States government in the courts because I have faith in Hong Kong's rule of law. My intention is to ask the courts and people of Hong Kong to decide my fate. I have been given no reason to doubt your system." Does that sound like somebody who understands the situation he's in, or is he being too optimistic?
Well, I think in terms of process rights, he's absolutely correct. I mean, this is a due process society. We've got constitutional rights, freedom of expression, fair trial rights. So he have no problems with getting entitlements in terms of process. Whether he will be ultimately returned, I mean, that's another question. There's very few cases where people have succeeded in challenging extradition surrender requests. But another thing I think he has to bear in mind, and perhaps I don't know if he's psychologically or mentally been prepared for this, is that he'll likely be in custody while this fight goes on. It's very difficult to get bail. I mean, it's possible, but you have to show special circumstances. So this is a very interesting case where you have both the surrender and the asylum elements combined. So in Hong Kong, we have thousands of asylum seekers, mm-hmm. and for various reasons, they're sort of stuck here. because of procedural inadequacies, and I can go into that in a moment. But they often are free. They have bail. They have recognizance, and they can live in the community. And so that's why it's possible for them to go on for years. Although their situations are very desperate, right? Mm-hmm. Government doesn't give them any support at all. That's going to be contrast to someone like Snowden, where he's also facing the surrender request, but in custody. Mm-hmm. So yes, you can fight, and it may take years, but I mean, do you want to actually be in custody for years? So that'll be an important question that he'll have to consider down the road.
Yeah. So is the only way that he could wind up being free in Hong Kong if he is in fact granted asylum? And let's leave aside for now the way that the Chinese government might eventually override a decision in Hong Kong. But is the only decision that could be made in Hong Kong that would make him a free man one to grant asylum?
Well, look, there's two possibilities. One is within the surrender process itself, you can have the surrender prohibited if you can show the political offense exception. That's standard sort of extradition law exception.
If they think he's being prosecuted for political reasons in the United States.
That's essentially, in a nutshell, yes. And so that could then short-circuit the surrender process, and then he would then be an illegal immigrant here, so he could be charged with immigration offenses and deported. Then he needs the asylum process to stay here indefinitely, or to be removed to somewhere else. Where he might be able to go. And so, yes, asylum, and asylum would trump the surrender proceedings as well. So that would be the ultimate issue.
So ultimately, he needs asylum there, the only other option being if he's granted, you know, if the U.S. isn't given the extradition at once, the only other option being for him to go to some country where maybe he would have better luck on the asylum front. Now,
of course, one more consideration, of course, is that once he sort of is, once the surrender proceedings end in his favor, I mean, that's the beginning of regularizing his life here in Hong Kong. So, you know, we talk about asylum, but he could well find a job. Mm-hmm. He, like many expats who work in Hong Kong, and I'm sure he won't have any difficulty finding a job here, and you get a work visa, and then he could start the clock ticking for his residency here in Hong Kong.
So he could, he could in principle remain there without having, with uncertain status, but live a comfortable life for quite a while.
Yeah, and then, but of course, travel to other countries will be dangerous.
Yeah, well, right. You can't have everything, you know. So, and what is your feeling about the normal, I forget the exact language, but the question of whether his prosecution is thought to be for political issues, if that's the main way, if that's his main loophole here, what are the chances that will be the ruling in Hong Kong?
Look, it's tough to give an opinion on that now for two reasons. One is, we really don't know all the circumstances. And in fact, the circumstances unravel each day. Mm-hmm. I mean, things that U.S. officials say is going to be relevant to this kind of issue. Hmm. I mean, and the more they sort of rattle their swords, call him a traitor and saying he's an enemy of the state, that sounds a lot more political.
They've said things like this. They've used the word treason, right? Or is there somebody? I mean, I guess I'm not clear on which exact politicians have done that. It would have to be people in the executive branch who have said these, I assume, for them to have much
and weight. Maybe perhaps they could argue that's a bit more removed from the actual people handling the case. Mm-hmm. So prosecutors, investigators have to also be very careful about what they say. But the other uncertainty, of course, is that this is an issue that, as far as I know, hasn't been litigated in the Hong Kong courts. So there are, elements of our surrender law that have not been interpreted. We don't know how they might be applied. So that's also an uncertainty. Sure, we can look to other countries because, surrender law is a kind of law that you can draw upon comparative experience from other jurisdictions, but it's still a bit unclear about how the Hong Kong court approached that.
Do you mean there haven't been surrender cases so far?
none that have raised the issue of the political offense exception. There have been many surrender cases. Not too many that are litigated in the courts, but even of those that have been litigated, I don't think the issue of political offense has arisen.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, there is no doubt some suspicion in the United States that this will ultimately be a matter of politics more than of law. I think a lot of people in the United States don't, and I count myself among them actually, don't clearly understand the relationship of Hong Kong to China as a practical matter. I mean, I know it's an administrative zone, and there are these that strictly speaking, there is autonomy in matters like this, unless China overrides the ultimate decision, which it can do under strict provisions. But, you know, some people no doubt suspect that at the end of the day, Hong Kong's part of China. The Chinese regime will decide what is in its political interest here, and that's what will happen. Is that an unfounded suspicion?
Well, I don't like generalities, and I think, in fact, one of the good things about this case is that it's an opportunity to sort of explain how the one country, two system model has worked and does work. In general, you know, we have fairly strong safeguards as to the rule of law in Hong Kong. We've got an independent judiciary. We have a very interesting court system where we have foreign judges who sit on our final court, and they add an element of not only quality to the judgment decision.
That's really unusual. Is there any other place in the world that has foreign?
There are. I mean, it's not foreign to common law systems, especially the smaller common law systems, where there may not be the expertise locally. But this was a system we chose to adopt after 1997, and it's been a big boom to our state of law, and given confidence to investors, etc. So in that sense, there's many things to say, positive things to say about our system of justice. However, there are moments when the Chinese government can and has intervened. And the question is this going to be one of those moments? Because, of course, in our constitutional framework, it is said that China has jurisdiction over matters of foreign affairs and defense, as you would expect. Mm-hmm. And the question is, to what extent is this case going to engage those interests enough that China would intervene? But even if they intervene, they just can't do it willy-nilly. You have to do it according to how the law has structured such intervention. And here you have to look at our surrender law, because there's actually a provision that deals with instances where the PRC can intervene. It says, firstly, that our chief executive has to notify the central government about extradition proceedings. Mm-hmm. And secondly, it says that if the matter is going to significantly affect, and I emphasize those words, significantly affect foreign affairs and defense of the central government, then they can give instructions to the chief executive. Mm-hmm. All right? They can't give instructions to the courts. The courts remain independent. Hmm. So what that means is that if the courts were to say that he should not be surrendered, that's the end of it. Mm-hmm. Because you don't move to the second stage of decision-making involving the chief executive. Right? It's only when you move to the second stage of decision-making, and if the chief executive on his own was to think either we should surrender or we shouldn't surrender, that's where China could interfere and say, well, you should follow our instructions.
But it might never get to the chief executive. In other words, in theory, the courts could decide both not to grant surrender to the U.S. and to grant asylum. The courts could do both of those?
In which case,
the Chinese government would not have the legal authority to override.
That's right. That's due to our high degree of autonomy. It's only where you have a question concerning the interpretation of our constitution, the basic law, that there are some decisions, questions of law that have to be referred to a body in mainland China. Mm-hmm. But that's when you have to interpret the constitution, and I don't see any issues of that kind arising.
So it seems likely then that this will be settled one way or another by the courts and not the chief executive.
Well, if the courts give the green light, then we got to go to the chief executive.
If they grant the surrender request.
Yeah, if they're prepared to say that we can commit him to the custody of the chief executive for surrender purposes, and then we have to focus our attention on the chief executive.
Okay. But if they give Snowden, if the courts give Snowden what he would like and what he needs to be free, it won't reach the level of the chief executive.
That's right.
And in that event, Chinese government could not formally exert influence. Now there is the question about subterranean politics, but what you're saying is, as a structural matter, leave aside whether the Chinese government could have a conversation with the chief executive and, you know, get some business done quietly. You're saying that just really doesn't matter. The court, as a structural matter, the court system is autonomous.
For this issue, yeah, I would agree. I mean, a couple years ago, we had another case that was a bit more controversial, not about surrender, not about human rights.
Mm-hmm.
But it was a case where Chinese interests were directly implicated, and they did intervene. This is a case about whether you could sue a country in Hong Kong courts, whether you could sue an African country in Hong Kong courts, and an African country claims what is known as state immunity from suit in the Hong Kong courts. And here China did get involved. They say, well, this is a matter that we should have the final say on. They got involved and they won. And then the court sort of, in a way, admitted the Chinese interest and did refer a question to the Chinese body.
Mm-hmm. In Snowden's case, if the court's verdict was to surrender him and he was handed into the custody of the chief executive and the Chinese government wanted to intervene, I'm trying to imagine what the logic of the decision would be. It has to be a case basically of national security, right? They have to be able to say the national security interests of the Chinese government dictate that we keep him here.
Yeah.
And it's not that easy for me to imagine that case being plausibly made. It would be one thing if it were a Chinese citizen with knowledge of their surveillance system, right? Leaving the country. But it's much harder for me to imagine the case being plausibly made here.
I think once we get to that level of decision making, probably more politics will enter. Mm-hmm. I mean, it will probably be up to China to really define what they mean by foreign affairs. And there, there are many elements that could come into it. And I think one element that we have to bear in mind is China's relationship with Hong Kong, and how important China sees that in maintaining that relationship, because you have to now situate this issue in the broader political context of Hong Kong. What's going on right now? You know, we're coming up to July 1st, and that's the day of major protests in our city.
Mm-hmm.
We'll see thousands of people going on the street, you know, for whatever various reasons.
Why is that? Does that happen every year?
It happens every year. It started in 2003. You know, just the culmination of public anger, unhappiness with the Hong Kong government, with concerns of China increasingly trying to interfere in our political system. And so it's that tension that I don't think China would want to make worse.
Mm-hmm.
And so that, I think, is a very important element in these kinds of decisions. Is it really worth this one man to try to intervene here?
Although it sounds like if the courts were prepared to turn him over and China intervened to stop that, China would have the support of a lot of people in Hong Kong, right?
That's true. But again, at the same time,
intervention itself is a touchy issue.
But at the same time, you know, having passed the level of the courts, in a way, China is a bit is insulated from scrutiny, saying, you know, they can say, well, the court said that it's fine. We're just going to respect that decision,
mm-hmm.
And we see no other reason not to.
Mm-hmm.
And in a way, that's also then, you know, would help them in terms of their foreign relations with the U.S. as well, So that is also, I think, probably the more likely outcome.
And by the way, there are sometimes in the U.S. judges are thought to be responsive to popular sentiment. Sometimes just because that's kind of the way people are, but sometimes because they are actually elected and will be up for re-election in some places. What is the degree of sensitivity of the Hong Kong courts to grassroots opinion in Hong Kong?
Yeah. Look, we don't have elected judges here, so you don't have that kind of direct influence. I mean, people talk about this. Academics talk about it. We speculate it. We often identify certain decisions which we say, you know, our judges had basically conformed to the public opinion. Mm-hmm. But on the whole, judges, of course, they themselves rebuff any notion of surrendering to public opinion. And you have enough diversity of views in the judiciary where you see judgments, you know, being decided in one way in the lower courts and then being reversed in the higher courts. So there's enough of that going on that you can feel assured that there's independence in our system.
You know, all told, it sounds to me like Snowden kind of knew what he was doing. I mean, when he first just said he was going to Hong Kong, you had these people saying he doesn't understand the actual situation with blah, blah, blah in Hong Kong. He should have gone to Iceland. Sounds to me like he had the thing pretty well sussed out. And then he only helped his case, if anything, with the disclosures about American hacking of Chinese and Hong Kong computers.
Does that seem right? I agree with that. I mean, one also has to understand what is it that he wanted to achieve. And it seems like Hong Kong was fit for his purpose. I think that's what one has to understand. I mean, if his ultimate goal is to completely evade any form of justice, well, you know, maybe he could have gone to Bhutan, right? Mm-hmm. But that's not his end goal, and he wants to be in a safe, comfortable, interesting place where he can continue to inform the public about what's going on, and in the system would give him enough time to do that. Mm-hmm. Ultimately. He may have to be sent back. He may decide to go back himself. He may feel that everything he's done has already been accomplished, that his American lawyers tell him that if you go back, you do a short jail sentence and you're free. That might well be.
You know what? I don't think he's going to get a short jail sentence if he comes back to America. I don't think he's ever getting out of jail if he comes back to America. I'm not a legal expert. But I'm telling you, the administration is going to be playing hardball on this one. And I mean, kind of understandably. I mean, personally am on his side in the sense that I think America had a right to know this stuff, and I admire him for disclosing it. On the other hand, if you're somebody running a government, you need to establish the precedent that people who disclose documents like this don't wind up, you know, being happy about it. You know, I mean, that's just the way any government is going to work, I think.
Well, I mean, I think the two responses to that. One is, I mean, what harm has he actually caused? I mean, relative to other whistleblowers, I mean, what is right. The overall harm and the benefit? And one has to weigh that. And then secondly, is he entirely to blame himself? I mean, what safeguards could the government have taken in these contractual relationships have to prevent this? I mean, I don't think...
No, that's all true. All I'm talking about is the incentive within the executive branch to make an example of him for future whistleblowers and would-be whistleblowers of all kinds. I think that's going to be the imperative felt in the...
That might be their motive, but you would hope that justice is more than that, and that's not what justice is about.
Maybe I've gotten cynical in my old age, but you certainly would hope that that's what justice is about. So the only downside then of Hong Kong is, as you said, during an extradition request, it can be hard to get bail, so he could wind up... doing some real jail time during the judicial process.
That's right, and conditions could be somewhat harsh. But I mean, it would really just depend on whether he's psychologically prepared for that.
Okay, final question. It is thought in the United States that the Chinese government conducts surveillance of its citizens at least as extensive as anything he's disclosed the American government doing. And I don't actually know to what extent the surveillance includes citizens of Hong Kong, but has there been much discussion of this and kind of appraising the merits of his case and how indignant people should be about what the American government is doing?
Yeah, I think certainly it's opened our eyes, and our legislators are asking questions already of our government. How much did they know? What further steps are they going to take to prevent this kind of surveillance? One issue that that they haven't started looking at, and I've been looking into it a bit, is to what extent are the U.S. activities in Hong Kong perhaps facilitated by disclosures that the Hong Kong government itself, and maybe even the Chinese government, has given to the U.S. government. And these are disclosures in the form of intelligence, pursuant to laws that allow for sharing of intelligence concerning terrorism. Mm-hmm. And so that may, in a way, has effectively served to sort of to bite us back, in a way, in inviting this kind of surveillance.
Hmm. Okay. All right. Anything else you want to say about the case before we?
Well, I could go on for a long time, but I think we just really simply have to wait and see. Okay. Every day is kind of a new story, and it seems like he is, as you said, staying put in Hong Kong. The search continues for where he is. No doubt, when the surrender request does come in, the authorities will need to arrest him, and that'll be an interesting new page to the story.
But for now, there's no police search because he's not subject to arrest for the
That's correct. But no doubt, I'm sure that the authorities here are probably trying to keep tabs on him, because when the request comes in, that's the next step, is to mm-hmm. search him out and to arrest him.
And do you have a sense for, once the U.S. makes the surrender request, how long it might take to get the first verdict on that issue itself, on surrender?
It's hard to say. I've looked at a few cases where individuals have actually consented to the surrender, mm-hmm. and where they're not contesting anything. And that whole process, from when the request comes in and when the person actually leaves Hong Kong, can take up to 3 to 4 months.
Yeah.
So even with consent, there's a bit of a delay. If there's a court proceeding, it could be several months before we get to the beginning of that court proceeding.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you again, Simon, for taking the time. This has been very illuminating. Thanks.
All right. Thank you.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.